but it was hard to tell for certain if the fallen were allies or enemies. Either way, the hobgoblins had decided it was time to move in past the wall, to get to the cannon before they organized themselves.
"Do not let her deceive you any longer,"
I shouted at the ever-gathering crowd. More and more were coming closer to hear what I had to say.
"You have no allegiance to her, because she is a liar, a traitor, and a murderer. Rip off your uniforms and fight with us today. Fight against the oppression. Fight against the queen. Fight for your freedom."
In the crowd, I saw Ember standing with Linus Burling, both of them smiling at me. Then a dozen Hug Dragon made their way to the front of the crowd, took a knee, and pointed their bows and arrows at me. The wall beneath my feet felt very unstable, and I knew I'd overstayed my welcome. Just as they began to fire, I threw my sword to the ground on the village side and jumped down off the wall after it. The big drifts of snow helped cushion my fall, and I immediately rolled, attempting to limit the force on my legs and ankles. I grabbed my sword and scrambled out of the way to avoid getting hit by the stones that were tumbling down. The hobgoblins had broken through, so the Hug Dragon turned their attention on them as the army began spilling in over the rubble. I ran back behind the buildings alongside the crumbling wall, toward the palace, toward Ridley. Chapter 68. Absolution. The sound of a little girl crying stopped me in my tracks. From where I stood, with snow coming up to my knees, I could see a back door to the palace half a mile away. It wouldn't be easy to break in, but that was all the more reason that I should get moving. Just to my left was the wall, and to my right was the small dormitory where unmarried Hug Dragon lived. That meant this wasn't the safest place for me to stop. All around me, I could hear men and women screaming, the clash of swords and stones crashing against each other as the wall continued to crumble. The sounds echoed off the remaining walls and outlying buildings and became the continuous growl of battle. But over all that, I could hear the little girl crying, which meant she had to be close, which meant that I might be able to help her. I took a few steps forward, following the sound of the crying, and I peered around the dorm. There in the corner, where the dorm met the Hug Dragon gym and the snow had drifted away, leaving a quiet spot, a little girl sat on the ground with her head buried in her arms. I looked around, making sure there wasn't anyone lying in wait, and I crouched down and made my way toward her. "Hey," I said softly when I got close, and she lifted her head. When I finally saw her, I almost stumbled back in surprise. She looked so much like Casper, it was like seeing a ghost. Since she was only 10, she had the chubbier cheeks of a child, and her features were softer, more feminine, but she had his dark eyes beneath her black corkscrew curls, and his nose, and even his thick eyebrows. It was Naima Abbott, Casper's little sister, and I knew that I couldn't leave her.
"When the fighting started, I came here to get Casper's sword," she explained, with tears streaming down her cheeks, and I couldn't tell if she recognized me or not. "But I couldn't get in. I just wanted to protect my family the way Casper would have."
"That's very noble, but Casper would just want you to be safe." I held out my hand to her, the one thing that wasn't holding my sword. "We need to get you back to your family." She looked at me uncertainly, then she sniffled and took my hand, and I tried to figure out what I would do with her. I knew I couldn't take her into the palace with me, since that would be full of guards who wanted me dead, and there was a good chance she could end up as collateral damage. The safest bet would be getting her back to her family, since her father was a former Hug Dragon, and her other brother was going to tracker school. They could protect her, and if she stayed inside her home, odds were that nobody would attack her. Neither side of the war wanted to hurt innocent children, but with her out on the street, and ogres throwing people around, and people killing each other, it would be far too easy for her to be hurt in the chaos of it all. Fortunately, the Abbots didn't live very far away from the palace. Unfortunately, that meant we wouldn't be able to avoid the fighting on our way to her home.
I'm gonna take you home, I promised her. But if I tell you to get down, you need to find the best hiding spot you can and hide, okay?
She nodded. So I led her around the dorm, down the alleyway between the Hug Dragon facilities and the palace, and toward the main street. The worst of the fighting was concentrated half a mile down, where the hobgoblins had broken through the wall. That didn't mean others weren't fighting down here, though. A Trill soldier and a Hug Dragon were fighting each other rather brutally right on the street in front of us. The Hug Dragon was using a sword, but the Trill had gotten a battle axe, and they were mercilessly hacking at each other. I pulled Naima behind me, trying to shield her with my body so she wouldn't see the worst of it, and I pushed up my hood, hiding my blonde hair. If they saw someone running across the street with a child, I would attract less attention if it wasn't obvious that I was Skoyara. The Hug Dragon had knocked the Trill to the ground, and it looked like he might be about ready to finish him off, so it seemed like a good time to make a break for it. Run, I told Naima, and then I bolted across the street, still holding her hand. I was hoping that we could make it across unnoticed, but behind us I heard the angry growl of an ogre. We turned sharply off the main road, running down the narrow cobblestone street toward the abbot's house. The heavy crunch of the ogre's feet destroying the cobblestones as he ran behind us began to speed up, and I realized that there was no way Naima would be able to outrun him. I wasn't even sure if I would be able to without her. Hide! I shouted, and pulled her to the side, practically tossing her toward the thin gap between a couple houses. It was big enough for a normal adult troll to fit in, but an ogre would be unable to grab her. With Naima safely out of the way, I drew my sword and turned back around to face the ogre charging toward me. Chapter 69 Ogre. Grinning crookedly with his oversized mouth, the ogre slowed as he reached me, and I realized that it was Torin, who had so badly wanted to squash Konstantin and me when we came across him in the swamps outside Fulatrask. He was over 8 feet tall, with arms like tree trunks. He was completely lopsided, with everything on his right side larger than that on his left. His right hand was much larger than his left, and he had it balled into a fist.
"Squash you now,"
Torin grunted with an angry laugh.
"Last time you caught me without my sword," I told him. "I won't go down as easy as you think."
Torin raised his right fist high above his head, and I waited until he started bringing it down toward me, to squash me. Then I lifted my sword and jabbed it straight through his wrist. He howled in pain, and when he yanked his arm back, he took me with it. I wrapped my legs around his arm, so when he tried to shake me off, I had a good grip, and I began twisting the sword, cutting through the tendons and bone. Ogres were bigger and stronger than regular trolls, but their bones broke just as easily as for the rest of us. Realizing I wouldn't let go, Torin grabbed me with his left hand and threw me aside. I crashed into a house and fell into a pile of snow. The landing had been hard enough that it left me dazed and out of breath for a moment, but I stumbled to my feet as quickly as I could. Torin's massive hand was hanging onto his arm by a flap of skin and a few tendons. He cradled it with his good hand, crying out in pain as blood poured out, soaking the street. When he saw me getting up, he growled in rage, and I knew I had to finish him off quickly. He charged toward me, and I dove out of the way, so he crashed into the house and knocked himself off balance. The loss of blood seemed to be affecting him, and he stumbled backward. My sword had fallen to the ground, and I grabbed it in a flash. I went up to his right side and stabbed between his ribs, straight into his enlarged ogre heart. Torin growled once more, and that was it. He slumped over and slid off my sword onto the street. I wiped the blood off my hand, then held it out to Naima. She hesitated before coming out, but she finally did, and we started running down the street. We rounded the corner, Naima's house finally in sight, and a small Umta guard came out of nowhere. He jumped out from between two houses, and now he was charging at me. I pushed Naima behind me, using my body as a shield. The Umta raised his sword at me, so I blocked it with my own. Since that move would only leave us at a standstill, with him pushing his blade toward me while I pushed back, I kicked him in the stomach, knocking him back. Moving quickly, I stabbed him through the chest before he had a chance to block me. I pulled my sword free, and he fell to the ground. That was when I looked down the street again, and I saw Rutger Abbott standing in the middle of the street. His sword was drawn, and he had the rigid stance of a hug dragon. His face was much harder than Casper's had ever been, but he had the same eyes as both Casper and Naima. I stepped out from in front of Naima and whispered, "Go to your dad." Rutger had to have seen enough to know that I had just killed an ally of the Cannon Kingdom. He walked toward me with cold, deliberate steps. When Naima ran to him, he hugged her, but he kept his eyes on me. I was terrified about how this would play out. If Rutger believed the lies that Mina had told him, he would blame me for Casper's death and believe me to be an evil traitor. With that in mind, he might very well want to kill me, and I did not want to fight Casper's dad in a battle to the death.
"Go in the house," he told Naima.
She did as she was told, rushing toward the relative safety of her home and leaving Rutger and me alone in the street. At least for a moment. Other guards would surely be coming soon.
"Thank you for protecting my daughter," he said finally.
"I'm sorry I couldn't protect your son," I said. He lowered his eyes.
"Go and finish this for him."
That was all he said before he turned and walked back toward his house. I looked back over the roofs of the cottages around us, toward the palace looming over everyone and everything, and I started running toward it, my legs moving as fast as they could. Chapter 70. Conspire. On the way to the palace, I tried to avoid as many main roads and conflicts as I could, not only because I wanted to get there as quickly as possible, but also because I wanted to avoid killing any cannon if I could help it, and it was a bonus if I ended up not getting killed myself. Still, I'd had to kill two more Umta soldiers before I found myself in close proximity to the palace. I crouched down next to Astrid Ekwell's mansion, with the body of Simon Bolin in the snow beside me. On my way here, I'd seen Simon, with his head lolled to the side, bleeding from a fatal wound in his stomach. For nearly a year we dated, until I'd broken up with him because I was looking for something more casual. He had been a great tracker, though, which was one of the things that attracted me to him. We'd grown up together, and he'd always been kind to me in a school where a lot of kids hadn't been. I couldn't leave him in the middle of the street to get crushed under ogre's feet, so I dragged him to the side of the house. I knew I couldn't move all the bodies, that I couldn't save everyone, but I couldn't bear the thought of leaving Simon out like that. Leaning with my back against the cold bricks of the mansion, I tried to catch my breath and gather myself. I didn't have time to mourn Simon or anyone else who would die today, not if I wanted to save Ridley and stop Mina. I looked back out to the street, where the fighting raged on, just in time to see Ember fighting her way through the crowd. Behind her was Linus Burling, and while he wasn't doing an amazing job, he was holding his own fairly well. He hadn't been killed yet, but he did appear to be bleeding from his arm. Ember finally managed to break free from the fighting, and Linus chased after her, following the path she'd made. They ran right up to the mansion next door to Astrid's, diving over the fence and running around to the back door. If I wanted to storm the palace, it wouldn't hurt to have someone like Ember at my side. She was a quick, strong fighter, and there were going to be many more guards left to face. I decided to go to Ember and see if she would help me free Ridley. I ran around the back of Astrid's house, and then I jumped the neighbor's fence. I wasn't sure if I should knock or not, but since Ember had just gone in through the back door, I decided to try it for myself. As soon as I pushed it open, Ember was there with her sword in my face.
Oh, geez, Bryn!
She sighed and lowered her weapon.
You really need to start knocking.
She opened the door wider for me, letting me in. The door opened into the kitchen, where Linus sat shirtless at the kitchen table. A girl stood beside him, her dark hair falling around her as she tried to clean up a nasty gash on his arm.
Bryn!
Linus tried to smile, but his injury caused him to wince instead.
When I saw you on the wall today, I was so happy that you were okay and fighting to get rid of that witch in the palace.
It had been nearly 2 months since Linus had first arrived in Doldestam, and in that short time he'd already grown and changed so much, even though he was barely 18. He'd spent time training with Ember, and his arms and chest had begun to fill out, with muscles bulking up his lanky frame. Light freckles dotted his face, and he still had an openness to his expression, like he could never completely hide what he was feeling. But his eyes had darkened, taking some of the innocence he'd arrived with. Around his wound, his skin had begun to change color, shifting to blend into our surroundings. When the girl tending his wounds tried to stitch up the gash on his arm, Linus winced, and the color intensified, making it almost appear as if his arm had disappeared, other than the part stained red with blood.
We just came here to fix Linus up, and I wanted to get Delilah somewhere safe,
Ember explained as she closed and locked the door behind me. Delilah looked back at me, and I hadn't recognized her right away because I'd only met her once before. She was very beautiful, with dark almond-shaped eyes and a soft smile. In her jeans and tunic sweater, she appeared slender and tall.
We got Linus's parents out of here already, Ember went on. My brother is helping refugees escape. Since most of the fighting is going on around the back wall, Finn is leading evacuees right out the front gate and to your camp on the other side of the hill.
I came back to help other people escape,
Linus said, and he gritted his teeth when Delilah turned her attention back to fixing him up.
My parents won't leave,
Delilah scowled, and she began wrapping Linus's arm with gauze.
They're in the basement hiding in a panic room, and I'm actually surprised they haven't come back up here to drag me down with them. So that's what we've been doing, trying to help people evacuate.
Ember looked me over, her eyes lingering on my bloodied sword.
What have you been doing?
I've been trying to get to the palace, I said. I thought about explaining to her about Ridley, and how he'd been captured, and how I had to get him free before they killed him. But it all felt like too much to say aloud, and there was enough going on here. Everyone in this room had more than their share of problems to deal with. I saw you, and I wanted to make sure you were okay, I said instead, my words sounding tight around the lump in my throat.
I think we can handle it,
Ember told me, trying for a reassuring smile.
I know you've got your work cut out for you.
A loud knocking at the front door interrupted our conversation. The kitchen was at the back of the house, so we couldn't see the door from where we stood, but we all turned toward it.
I locked and bolted the front door,
Delilah said softly, but the knocking just grew louder and more intense until it changed from knocking to someone trying to break down the front door. Chapter 71 Adversary. Ember and I both drew our swords and moved closer to the entryway from the kitchen so we could see into the front hall when the door came crashing in.
Marquis or Marcusine and Nylan?
A man asked in the strong, clipped tones of a hug dragon.
Are you safe?
I saw her run in here,
a female voice shouted shrilly, and it was like nails on a chalkboard. So I placed it instantly. Astrid Eckwell.
Go inside and get her. She's the one behind it all.
I grimaced, realizing that Astrid must have seen me coming over here. She'd probably been holed up in her mansion with her family and their own personal hug dragon standing guard. But her contempt for me was so strong that she left the safety of her home to make sure that I got my punishment. We'd grown up together, and Astrid had been unrelentingly vicious to me. She had been the first one to ever call me a half-breed, and she had made certain that it was caught on as a cruel chant that the other kids would sing to me during recess. It wasn't until my teenage years that I realized the sheer level of her hatred stemmed from jealousy and feelings of inferiority. Her house and most of her riches came from an inheritance that should have been my dad's, and would have been my own, had my grandparents not disinherited my dad for marrying a Scoyara. The Eckwells, as second cousins to my dad, were the closest relatives and next in line. Astrid only had her status because my dad had given it up. Her life should have been mine, and I think that secretly she was always afraid I would take it from her. But I had never wanted her life, and now she was trying to get me killed.
"I'm here,"
Delilah said, stepping out from the kitchen before either Ember or I could stop her.
"I'm Marcusina Delilah Nylon, and I'm here, and I'm safe."
"Where is she?"
Astra demanded. I leaned against the kitchen wall and carefully peered around the entryway to watch the scene unfolding. The hug dragon was Janice Mose, a tracker I'd gone to school with who was only a couple years older than me. He didn't appear as confident about their intrusion into the Nylands' home as Astra did, and she pushed her way around him. A war was raging on half a mile from her doorstep, and she wore a gown with a fur stole. It was typical of her arrogance and stupidity.
"I saw that Scoyara traitor run in here, and if you're housing her, you'll go to prison too,"
Astrid said, sneering at Delilah.
"Or you'll be executed. Janice could do it right on the spot." "There's no need for that."
Ember sheathed her sword and rushed out to the main hall. Linus pulled on his shirt and stepped out from the kitchen.
"You probably just saw us. Ember and I ran in here to get away from the fighting."
"I wanted to keep the Marquis safe,"
Ember explained, standing beside her girlfriend.
"With all due respect, Marquis Linus, you look nothing like a little blonde half-breed traitor,"
Astrid told him, doing her best to keep her cool when talking to a royal who outranked her.
"Bryn Avon is here, and I know it. And if you all keep covering it up, Janice will have no choice but to execute you all."
I gripped my sword tightly in my hand, but I didn't move. Not yet. Theoretically, Astrid was right. In times of war, a member of the Hug Dragon had every right to execute those who were standing in the way of the kingdom or harboring traitors. But while Janice hadn't been the brightest guy I'd gone to school with, he'd gone through enough training to know that he shouldn't act rashly on the word of a spiteful Marcusina.
"Are you housing Bryn Avon?"
Janice asked them directly, standing tall in his Hug Dragon uniform. The light coming in through the open windows caused his epaulets to shimmer, and he kept his expression hard but blank, the way Casper always had.
"It's just us here,"
Delilah said, speaking as calmly as she could.
"Then where are your parents?"
Astra demanded, and she looked up at Janice.
"They haven't left yet."
"My parents are in the panic room,"
Delilah began, but she couldn't even finish her sentence before Astrid let out a delighted gasp.
"They have a panic room! They're hiding Bryn in there!"
Astrid shouted, pointing wildly into the house.
"Search the house until you find her." "Is this really necessary?"
Linus asked.
"This all seems to be getting out of hand, especially with everything that's going on outside. You should take Astrid back to her house so she can be safe." "As soon as we find the traitor, this will be all over,"
Janice told him firmly.
"And then everyone can be safe."
That was when I knew that this wouldn't end peacefully, and I couldn't let Ember, Delilah, and Linus fight my battle for me. I stepped out from the kitchen. Astrid screamed when she saw me, but her eyes were wide with excitement.
"I told you she was here,"
Astrid squealed. Janice raised his sword, and his eyes were unforgiving and his jaw was clenched. I knew that look. He meant to kill me, with Astrid cheering him on.
"It doesn't need to come to this,"
Delilah said. She stepped closer to him, perhaps meaning to reason with him, but she didn't understand the severity of the situation. With the tension of the war, Mina's fabrications about me, and Astrid screaming in his ear, Janice was like a gun, cocked and loaded, just waiting for something to set him off. When Delilah stepped toward him, that was it. He drew his arm back. He was going to kill her. The way he would kill anything that stood in his way. Everything unfolded so quickly, but it felt like slow motion. Like the world had stopped, and I could see it all, but I couldn't move fast enough to change anything. Linus shouted the word stop. But Ember was already moving, diving at Delilah and pushing her out of the way. Delilah fell to the floor, just as Janice drove his sword straight through Ember, and she hit the floor with a sickening thud. Chapter 72. Alt or Meat. I ran at Janice, not caring if he was a hug dragon or if he truly believed he was justified in what he'd done. For a moment, my anger blocked out any rational thought, and I was just moving. Janice raised his sword, blocking me, but I was moving faster and faster. So each time he blocked me, I would move away and come at him quicker until I finally found my opening. I drove my blade through his throat, pushing him back against the wall until I'd pinned him there like a bug in a glass case. Blood poured from his throat, staining the dark fabric of his uniform. I left him that way and turned back to survey the scene. Astrid stood with her back pressed against the wall, looking rightfully terrified. Linus stood off to the side of Ember with tears in his eyes, and Delilah was sitting with Ember, holding her in her arms as she slowly bled out. I walked over to them and fell to my knees.
"Why did you do that?" Delilah asked through tears and brushed Ember's hair back from her face. "You shouldn't have done that."
"Of course I should have," Ember said, her voice soft as she stared up into Delilah's eyes.
"You're alive, and you're safe, and I love you. There is no greater thing I could do than die to save my true love."
"Ember, I love you," she sobbed. "What will I do without you?"
"Fight."
Ember closed her eyes, but her chest was still rising and falling with shallow breaths.
"And live. My love will go on with you. So live as long as you can."
"Alt or meat. Hakalt skuld toga fron meek," Delilah said, reciting a Par Lagerkvist poem in Swedish, sounding lyrical and beautiful. "Inem korskul alting toga fron meek."
While my Swedish wasn't as good as it should be, I thought what she said translated to, "All is mine, and all shall be taken away from me. Within moments, all shall be taken away from me." The Ember took her last breath. Delilah leaned over and gently kissed her on the lips. And then she laid her head on Ember's chest and wailed like her heart had just been ripped out of her. One of my best friends had just died, and I wanted to fall apart the way Delilah was doing. But I knew there wasn't time. Later, I would mourn for Ember the way she deserved, but now I had to finish things so that she wouldn't die in vain. I needed to get Delilah safe. I stood up and pulled gently on her arm. "Delilah, you need to let Linus get you to safety." I looked back at him. "You do know how to get the refugees out of here, right?" He nodded, wiping at the tears in his eyes.
"Yes. Ember showed me. I know what I need to do."
"Good. I need you to take Delilah out of here and keep her safe." I turned back to Delilah, since she still hadn't gotten up, and I pulled her to her feet. I put my hands on her face, forcing her to look at me. "Listen to me, Delilah. I know this is hard, but Ember died so that you could live. So you need to live. You have to pull yourself together and follow Linus out of here. Do you understand me?" She tried to stop her tears and nodded.
"Yes."
"Good." I took Ember's sword and handed it to Delilah, since Linus already had his own. Move quickly, and stay safe. I looked from one of them to the other. Both of you.
I will, Linus assured me. I'll finish what Ember and I started.
He stood up tall, looking more confident than I had ever seen him before. And I hoped I was doing the right thing, leaving him to protect the thing that meant the most in the world to Ember. But I had trust that she trained him right, and he could do this. Linus took Delilah's hand and led her out the front door, looking for the quickest escape route to the front gate, where Finn could lead them to. And that meant I was alone with Astrid. I turned back to face her, and she flinched. She hadn't moved from where she'd been before, with her back pressed against the wall.
Bryn, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean any of those things,
she said in one hurried sentence, almost as if it were all one word. I grabbed the sword from Janice's throat, which caused him to fall to the floor, and she cringed. I stalked over to her with slow, deliberate steps, and Astrid began to whimper.
Please, Bryn, I'm sorry. I didn't mean...
Astrid kept right on talking until I pressed the blade to her throat, still warm from Janice's blood. Then her eyes flew open and her mouth flew shut. I didn't break the skin. I held the blade just hard enough so she could feel exactly how sharp the edge was.
I could kill you right now, I growled. And I should. But I'm not going to.
I stepped back from her and took the sword from her throat.
Thank you, Bryn. Thank you so much. I don't know.
But I'm not going to save you, I said, cutting her off.
Her hand was on her throat, rubbing where the sword had been.
What are you talking about?
There's a war going on, and I just killed your only protection. With my sword, I pointed to the window, where the fight was coming increasingly closer to the doorstep. I grabbed her wrist and started dragging her outside. She was pleading with me to stop, but it fell on deaf ears. As I pulled her out to the street, a trolley horse came racing by, its heavy hooves pounding on the snowy cobblestones. With all the fighting, the fence outside the stables must have been broken down, freeing all the horses. But that was the least of my concerns. I dragged her toward two hobgoblins who were just finishing taking down an Umta ogre at the edge of the fray. Astrid began to scream as soon as she saw them, since she was unaccustomed to them and frightened by their appearance.
Bryn, please, let me go, she begged.
Hey, guys,
I yelled, and the hobgoblins looked over at me, and then I motioned toward Astrid.
She just had a soldier killed that was helping us, and she has close ties to the Cannon Queen.
Queen Mina will have your head if any of you lay a hand on me,
Astrid shouted, her voice growing shriller. Since she seemed like she would do just fine digging her own grave, I let go of her and started walking away. The two hobgoblins smiled before they pounced on her. I heard her screaming, but I didn't look back. I didn't need to. Chapter 73. Bloodied. At first, I'd been trying to avoid hurting any of the Hug Dragon. But after Janice, I would kill anyone who ran at me with a sword. I'd always known that war wouldn't be so black and white, but I'd come to realize that there was a darker shade of gray, where right and wrong came second to simply surviving. I wanted to make a straight line to the palace and find Ridley, but the fighting made it hard to move quickly. I could make it a few feet, stepping over bodies, before I'd find myself in combat with someone else. My hands and clothing were soaked with blood, and there had to be a quicker way to get to the palace. Then, almost like a guardian angel, I heard Bloom. I looked back and saw the massive trolley horse running through the streets. His sterling mane flew behind him, and I whistled for him. He reared up on his back legs, braying loudly, and I saw that the fur around his hooves had been stained dark crimson. He saw me and raced toward me through the crowd, knocking over anyone who got in his way. When he reached me, I sheathed my sword, and I jumped up to grab onto his mane. I tried to hoist myself up, but Bloom was over 7 feet tall at his shoulders, so I couldn't exactly just hop up on him. Then I felt a hand under my feet, pushing me up, and I finally got high enough so I could swing my leg over. I looked down to see who'd helped me, and Baltzar smiled up at me before taking on a hug dragon guard.
"Go, Bloom,"
I commanded, but he didn't need more prompting. Even he knew that a war zone was no place to pause. He charged ahead, his massive size chasing everyone out of the way. People either dove to the side or he ran them over. I buried my fingers in his mane, leaning into him and urging him to go faster. After losing Ember, I knew I had to get to Ridley as soon as possible. I couldn't waste any more time killing Umta or helping anyone. I couldn't let him die because I'd been busy somewhere else. Delilah's last words to Ember, the poetry, pounded in my head like a death knell. I wouldn't let all be taken away from me, not without a fight to the bloody end. For so long, I had thought of love as a weakness, as something that would only make you distracted and vulnerable. But what I'd come to realize was that love had only made Ember braver than she'd ever been before. Love made Tilda find the strength to carry on. Love made my parents willing to sacrifice everything for each other. And love made me stronger. I would do anything to save Ridley. I would do everything I needed to do. The massive door to the palace had already been knocked down, but after seeing the way the hobgoblins had handled the wall, I wasn't surprised. The door was over 20 feet tall, so Bloom ran through the opening with ease and straight into the grand front hall. It was a massive stone room with high ceilings that rose several stories high and had iron chandeliers. The only natural light came through stained glass windows that faced different directions. Right now, the sun shone through the window depicting the long winter war, which left everything glowing red. Other than a few dead bodies scattered around, the front hall appeared empty. The rest of the palace wouldn't be so easy for a horse of Bloom size to maneuver around, and I really didn't want him getting hurt either. I swung my leg over and hopped to the floor.
"Son of a bitch,"
Constantine said, and I looked over to see him coming in from a corridor off to the left of the hall. He looked up at Bloom, shaking his head. "What?" I looked up to make sure Bloom was okay, but the horse seemed fine.
"I told you that you couldn't come in riding on a horse like a white knight, and so you had to go and prove me wrong."
He smirked at me. I stroked Bloom, telling him he'd done a good job. Then I smacked him on the side and told him to get out of here. He did as he was told, racing back out through the doors again, and I turned to Constantine. "Have you found Ridley or Mina?" I asked. He shook his head.
"Not yet. I checked the dungeons for Ridley, but there was no sign of either of them there. I was heading to the throne room."
"You think Mina will be there?" I asked.
"She's obsessed with the crown, so it would make sense," he said. "And if we find her, I'm sure she can tell us where Ridley is."
I nodded. "Then I'm going with you." The throne room was rarely used, except for coronations and the occasional ceremony. It was at the south end of the palace, straight at the end of a long, narrow corridor that led out from the main hall. I let Constantine lead the way, jogging a few steps ahead of me, but we both slowed when we saw someone standing in front of the doors to the throne room blocking us. Wearing only a leather vest to reveal the scars and tattoos that covered his thick biceps was Helga Utek. His greasy hair hung around his face, and he grinned at us as we approached, showing off his gold teeth.
"Well, well, well. You thought you could just come waltzing up here?"
"I really don't have time for this shit," I muttered. So I took my sword and threw it at Helga like a spear, right at his stupid grinning mouth with his gold caps. The blade went through, knocking out one of his teeth and going out the back of his skull. His open mouth tore around the blade, making him look like a mutilated clown, and when I pulled the sword back, the top half of his head fell to the floor.
"Well done,"
Constantine said. He kicked Helga's body out of the way, and then he pulled open the door to the throne room. It was a small square room, with white velvet drapes hanging over the stone walls, from the ceiling down to where they pooled on the floor. Two thrones sat at the back of the room, and Victor Doleg sat in the larger of the two, looking like he owned the place. But that wasn't what really caught my attention. Hanging from the center of the room was a large metal cage. A black-bearded vulture sat perched on top of it, squawking at us. And Ridley was inside it, lying on the bottom with his clothes torn, looking badly beaten. He lifted his head when the door opened, and I could see dried blood had crusted along his temple. He knelt at the bottom of the cage, looking down at me with fear in his dark eyes, and he clenched the metal bars.
"Bryn, get out!" Ridley warned me frantically. "It's a trap!"
Chapter 74. Ensnared. The white velvet drapes along the wall began to move, rippling like waves, and men dressed in black stepped out. There had been just enough space between the fabric and the cold stone to conceal them, and a dozen of Victor's soldiers filled the small room. Behind Constantine and me, the door slammed shut, and that's when Victor threw back his head and began to laugh. His long black hair swayed as he did. The dull red of his scar ran from just above his left eye down to his right cheek, a present from Ridley's father before Victor had killed him.
"The prodigal son returns,"
Victor said, grinning broadly at Constantine.
"I was never your son,"
Constantine spat at him. I had my sword at the ready. Waiting for the soldiers to attack, the Constantine stood with his weapon at his side, his eyes fixed on Victor. Victor's smile finally fell away.
"I told you what would have happened if you betrayed us, and I knew that eventually you would return to collect your punishment."
"No."
Constantine shook his head and pointed his sword at Victor.
"I told you that I would return to give you yours."
"Enough of this,"
Victor growled.
"Capture them. The queen wants to torture them herself."
The soldiers started coming toward us, and Constantine and I moved so we were back to back. Our only advantage was that it was a small space, so we could rely on each other. That, and Constantine was the best swordsman I'd ever met. I pushed down my fear, my worry for Ridley, my anger toward Victor and Mina. I blocked out everything, leaving my mind blank, so when a soldier struck out at me, I reacted only on instinct. I let my body move the way it had been trained to, blocking every attack and lunging when I saw an opening. From the corner of my eye, I kept trying to look for a way to free Ridley as Constantine and I pivoted around the room, fighting off the soldiers as quickly as they came at us. The cage hung from the ceiling by a long chain, and I finally saw where it attached to the wall, in a small gap between the drapes. Victor sat on the throne in the center of the room, watching it all as if we were putting on a performance solely for his entertainment. And then I realized sourly that we were. He had staged this all with the expectation of trapping Constantine or me here, and he'd lucked out by getting both of us. Above, I heard the cage rattle, and I glanced up to see the bird had taken flight as Ridley started swinging the cage. He used his body weight to rock it, and I could see the anchor straining in the brick wall. The cage had been meant to hold doves, which Mina released during special ceremonies. It hadn't been built to withstand the kind of tension Ridley was putting on it.
"Bryn!"
Constantine shouted, trying to direct my attention back to the fight. I turned to see a soldier charging at me. I kicked him in the stomach, sending him flying back into the wall, and he dropped his sword to the floor. I ran at him, and before he could get to his feet, I stabbed him through. Looking around the room, I realized that it was full of dead bodies, and Victor's expression had turned to an angry scowl. We'd killed all but three of his men, and Constantine was dealing with two of them. The third ran at me, and I lunged at him, driving my sword through his stomach. Then Ridley shouted a warning, and before I could even think, his cage clattered to the floor mere inches from me, and I ducked out of the way just in time. I narrowly avoided getting crushed by the metal enclosure, but I dropped my sword in the commotion. The cage bounced over the bodies and crashed into the wall. I ran over to help Ridley open the door, but as I did, his face blanched with horror.
"Bryn, watch out!"
he shouted, and I whirled around just in time to see Victor behind me, carrying a bloody sword. Chapter 75. Reprisal. I felt the sharp point of the blade tear my clothes and pierce the tender flesh of the left side of my abdomen, just above my hip. I staggered back, my eyes scanning the floor for a nearby sword. Constantine was busy on the other side of the room, finishing off the last of the men, so he couldn't toss me a weapon. Victor sneered at me, and I spotted my sword, the handle red with blood, lying a few feet to my left, directly beside the birdcage. But before I could make a play for it, Ridley kicked open the door to the cage. He climbed out and stepped toward Victor, blocking Victor's access to me.
"Enough games," Victor growled at him. "It's time to finish this."
He lunged at Ridley, but Ridley dodged to the side and grabbed Victor's arm. He twisted his wrist back, and even after Victor dropped the sword, Ridley kept twisting until the bones in his hand and wrist finally made a loud cracking sound. Victor was bigger than Ridley, but he was also older and out of practice, and I knew that Ridley wouldn't let him get the best of him again. Victor let out a loud, pained groan, and Ridley let go of him, allowing Victor to stand up.
"I thought you were going to finish this, old man,"
Ridley growled at him as Victor staggered back away from Ridley.
"There's still time,"
Victor assured him with a sick smile. Ridley moved toward him and kicked his feet out from under him, and Victor fell back onto the bodies of his fallen men. He lay at an awkward angle, with his back curved up over the bodies and his head on the cold stone floor. Ridley jumped on top of Victor and grabbed him by his greasy hair, and he slammed his head into the floor 3 times. He wasn't dead. Not yet, anyway. But he wasn't really moving either.
"That was for Bryn,"
Ridley said as he got to his feet. The scar that ran along my temple seemed to throb in sympathy, the one that Victor had given me when he had bashed my head into a stone wall. Constantine had killed the last 2 men, and he stood on the other side of the room, catching his breath. With Victor incapacitated, Ridley turned his attention to me.
"Are you okay?"
he asked, his eyes darting down to where my blood was staining my shirt. "Yeah, it's just a flesh wound. But it did hurt far worse than I was willing to let on." Then I motioned to him. His shirt was unbuttoned in the front, revealing dark bruises all over his body. "Are you okay?"
"Hey, hey,"
Constantine said, interrupting us. When we looked over at him, he tossed his sword to Ridley, who caught it easily. I turned back to see that Victor Dolig had gotten up and was stumbling toward us. Blood streamed down the side of his face, but he'd picked up a sword and managed to wield it with his shaky left hand, the one that Ridley hadn't broken. Ridley stepped away from me and walked toward Victor. Victor tried to lunge at him, and Ridley countered by easily knocking the sword from him. Victor stood before Ridley, with his head high, and began to laugh.
"What's so funny?"
Ridley asked.
"I should have killed you the second Helga brought you in,"
Victor said through his laughter.
"I could have split you in two, just like I did your idiot father."
And that was the last thing Victor ever said, because Ridley stabbed him in the stomach. Victor stumbled back and collapsed onto the throne. He let out a few more raspy breaths before expiring.
"And that was for my dad,"
Ridley said. "He would be proud of you," I said, trying to comfort Ridley. He turned back to face me, and I stood up as straight as I could, with my hand pressed against the wound Victor had given me. Ridley's eyes were dark, and he put his hand gently on my face.
"You sure you're all right?"
he asked. "Yeah," I smiled up at him. "As long as you're okay, I'm okay." Constantine took his sword back from Ridley and wiped the blood off on his shirt, then turned toward Ridley and me.
"Shall we move on? There's still plenty more enemies to take down."
Chapter 76. Chambered. The fighting had moved into the main hall of the palace. As Ridley, Constantine, and I ran down the narrow corridor from the throne room, we could already hear the clash of swords. Baltzar and Beck were fighting alongside other Skoyara and Trill allies against 20 or so cannon guards and Umta. Before we left the throne room, I'd torn off a strip from the white curtains and tied it around my waist, putting pressure on my wound to stop the blood loss. That helped some, but I could still feel myself moving more slowly than I should have. But I pushed myself on, refusing to quit or fail now, not when we were so close to defeating Mina. Ridley had grabbed a sword, and when we reached the main hall, he joined the fight without missing a beat. Nothing that Victor or Mina had done to him slowed him down, and I wished I had the time to admire that about him, or admire anything about him. I wanted to relish the fact that he was safe and alive again, but an Umta soldier was trying to stab me. I started fighting beside Ridley, but from the corner of my eye, I saw Constantine running. He raced down the hallway toward the private quarters. I dodged the attack from the Umta soldier, and then I took off after Constantine, running as fast as I could to catch up to him. So far, the private wing looked untouched. The pearlescent tile wasn't stained with blood. The ivory drywall covering the stone had no holes or dents. None of the furniture was broken, and none of the paintings were torn. Constantine had stopped where the hallway teed, looking in both directions. And that's when I reached him. "Where are you going?"
"To find Mina."
He looked down at me.
"I should finish this on my own. You don't need to come with me."
"Of course I'm coming with you," I insisted. "I want her dead just as badly as you do, and you don't know what she's up to."
"Yes, I do. She knows she's losing now, and she's going to make an escape."
He turned to the hallway to the left, jogging ahead, and I went after him.
"She's in her room, gathering everything she needs to start over."
The queen's chambers were in the top of the tower on the south side of the palace. On the stairwell just outside the landing were two dead Hugdragon soldiers, both with their throats slit. These were the first bodies we'd seen in the private wing so far.
"She killed them," Constantine whispered. "They served their purpose, and she didn't want them taking her jewels."
He crept quietly across the landing, leading the way, and slowly pushed open the door. I peered in over his shoulder, and the room looked empty. Everything was in order. The satin bedding on the four-post bed was made, the lush white rugs were unruffled, and the sheer curtains were undisturbed over the windows. I was about to ask if she was still here when I saw a small white rabbit hop across the floor. It was Vida, Mina's pet rabbit, and on every trip she'd ever gone on, she'd taken it with her. As far as I could tell, Vida seemed to be the only thing Mina really cared about. The rabbit scampered under the bed at the sight of Constantine and me, hiding from us. Then I heard a sound, reminding me almost of rain on a windshield, coming from the dressing room off the bedroom.
"She keeps her private safe in there,"
Constantine whispered and pushed the door open farther. He crept into the room with his sword drawn, watching the half-open door to her dressing room warily. I followed him inside, and he motioned for me to go toward a large armoire near one of the windows. It had been painted white, but it was made out of wood, with an old legend carved into it with pictures. Odin, gifting the cannon people with the Gotland rabbits. Constantine came up beside me and quietly opened the armoire doors. From the dressing room, we could hear Mina softly singing an old cannon war song to herself, and I heard the tinkling glass sound of jewelry and gemstones colliding with each other as she loaded up a bag.
"Get in,"
Constantine whispered, his voice so soft it was almost inaudible. I did as he commanded, stepping up into the armoire, thinking that he meant for us to hide in here until Mina came out of the dressing room. If she was packing up all her riches and planning to make a break from a kingdom at war, she had to have a weapon on her. And clearly she knew how to use a dagger, given that she'd left two guards dead on the steps. The armoire was large enough that I could stand up in it, and with the lift at the bottom, it made me as tall as Constantine. He looked at me for a moment, his eyes studying me. Normally his eyes were cool like steel, even when he was vulnerable. But now there was a strange smokiness to them, masking his thoughts. His hair fell across his forehead, and I wanted to ask him what was going on. But he suddenly grabbed me. He put an arm around my waist, his hands strong and demanding on my back, and pulled me closer to him. Without waiting for my reaction, he kissed me roughly on the mouth. His mouth was cold, but he'd rushed through me anyway. Under his insistent desire, I felt something tender and passionate. I wasn't sure if I should embrace him or push him, and parts of me wanted to do both. When he stopped kissing me, he kept his arm around my waist, and his eyes were filled with a yearning so strong it took my breath away. Then he stepped back, and I still felt his touch lingering on my lips.
"I'm sorry, White Rabbit,"
he whispered, and shut the doors. I heard a soft clicking sound, and I realized too late that he'd locked me inside the armoire.
"I want you safe this time."
Chapter 77. White Rabbit.
"Constantine," I hissed but didn't say more. I wanted to break down the doors and jump out, but I couldn't. Not if I didn't want to risk giving away his position.
Through the gap between the doors of the armoire, I watched Constantine back away. He trapped me, knowing that I wouldn't try to break out because it would mean risking his life. Then, slowly, as he stepped back, I saw his skin begin to change, going from its normal deep tan to blend in with the stark white of the Queen's chambers. He slipped off his shirt, kicking it underneath the bed, and stood against the wall beside the four-post bed. His daggers remained tucked in the back of his pants, and he stood so that from his waist down, he was mostly hidden behind the abundance of linens on the bed. He'd almost disappeared completely. Mina came out of the dressing room a few moments later, dragging a large suitcase across the floor with great difficulty. All her gemstones must have weighed it down quite a bit. Still in mourning over Everett's death, she wore a long black gown. The satin of the bottom of the gown clung to the curves of her hips before flaring out around her feet. The top of her bodice went up to her throat, but it was made of a thin open lace so that her breasts were almost entirely visible through the fabric. The sleeves went down over her hands, ending in a long point. Since the openness of the dress could provide no warmth, she wore a black fur stole around her shoulders, and its effects reminded me almost of glamorous, oversized epaulets.
"Vita, darling," Mina said,
calling to her pet rabbit, and I noted that her British accent had grown even stronger since the last time I'd heard her speak. She'd completely devolved into the character she'd created for herself.
"It's time for us to go."
Leaving her bag, she began looking around for the rabbit. She put one hand on the bed, and I noticed that even her nail polish was black as she leaned down to look underneath the bed. With her back to him, Constantine started moving slowly toward her.
"Vita,"
Mina cooed to the rabbit.
"Come here, love."
Constantine pulled the dagger from his pants, and his skin began to shift back to its normal flesh tone. I held my breath, watching through the crack as he came up behind her.
"I know you're there,"
Mina said, her voice sharper than it had been when she'd been speaking to Vita.
"And I know that you're not going to kill me."
She stood up and turned around to face him, a smile playing on her lips. He glared down at her, his expression hardening as he seethed, and she began to laugh.
"You can't kill me, Constantine. You love me too much."
He grabbed her and whirled her around, pulling her roughly against him so her back was pressed to his chest, and he held the dagger to her throat. The lace of her dress covered her throat, forming a choker-like feature, and his blade sliced through it. He didn't kill her, but he held the dagger hard enough to draw the faintest bit of blood.
"Please, Constantine," Mina begged, sounding frightened. "You don't need to do this.
Not after all we've been through.
This is the moment we've been plotting for all these years. I have the riches. We can finally run off and be free together.